We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Horrocks.
Hello, and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting scene in the Western Daily Press, read by the real Brian Perkins.
A collection of replica weapons and outfits used for battle reenactments have been stolen from a car in Bristol. The items taken include a short sword and matching dagger, a pair of gauntlets, a white basque, suspender belt and briefs.
Thanks to Brian Francis of Bristol for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Linda Smith and Gina Yashere. I'm placing them on my left, Alan Corran and Matthew Paris. Linda, how much currency do we put by William's claims that 7 days may be a long time in politics?
Oh, well, yes, this is about the euro, of course. William Hague has been saying that this is the last chance to save the pound, but this isn't really good enough. Part of his party think he's just going on too much about the euro, and they might even be slightly pro... Sorry, am I keeping you awake? I'm sorry, this is... It is incredibly boring. I've got some graphs to bring out later to explain all this, but who think, you know, that the euro might be okay. And then he's got a whole tranche of his party who really, they'd rather reinstate the groat than merely save the pound. So that's really what this one's all about, isn't it? I don't know. I kind of quite like the idea of keeping the pound, just because then you keep all the other foreign currency, because I like playing that game at the airport when you come back. Getting rid of every last coin of your foreign money in the coffee bar, so you don't have to admit defeat by throwing any in the charity buckets. You know, you're at the coffee bar and you're going, oh, let me see, I've got 200 pesetas. Oh, I have one white coffee, one black coffee. How much are chiclets? I have a croissant. You know, the waiter enjoys this as much as you do. So I don't know where I stand. I mean, was there as much fuss about decimalisation as there is?
Yes.
You're saying yeah. I think when you reach the age where you've got a favourite armchair, you're probably resisting change generally, aren't you, I think?
But what's so on the back of the favourite armchair, really? I'm still getting 2 bob bits and half crowns out of mine. And I love them, you're absolutely right. There's nothing like the feel of a half... Well, there's some things like the feel of a half crown, anyhow, but it had that weight.
I think that 7 days may be a long time in politics, but for William Hague, the long 7 days will be from June the 8th to June the 15th. Those may prove very long days indeed.
I imagine they drag a bit at the moment for him, the days. I can't imagine it's... I imagine he gets up every morning, goes downstairs and gives the paper boy a tenner to sod off, I think.
That's it, he's been going on about the big issues, this is the big issue. But I think on June the 8th, that's what he's going to be selling, isn't it?
2 points to Linda. Gina, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you.
How did a beer in the hand get 2 bushes into hot water?
This was about President Bush's 2 daughters caught with fake ID trying to get booze. I mean, they're under 18 where they were...
They're 19.
Are they? Really? Or is it under 21? You're not allowed to have drink?
I think you have to be over 35.
Well, this is it. They were caught trying to get drink with fake ID, and President Bush took them aside and sat them down and had a talk with them. But obviously, when he sat them down in the chair, he didn't actually plug it in this time. But yeah, that's basically what it's about.
This is the great thing about Texas, that you can't drink at 18, but you can be electrocuted at 18. It seems to be a
And also, you can marry livestock.
What?
You can marry livestock.
Yes, George Bush's 2 daughters, Jenna and Barbara, were picked up in a Texas bar, accused of trying to buy alcohol with fake IDs. At 19, the girls are technically 2 years below the legal drinking age, but following a recount, their father has managed to get their ages increased. 2 points to Gina. Matthew, why are police hoping that thieves will finally get the message?
Well, Simon, I'm pretty much out of touch with the news because I've been following the general election for the last week or so. Is there a story about thieves not getting the message?
Yes, there is, Matthew. Yeah. And Alan is frantically writing it.
I think that somebody stole a mobile telephone and text messaged the fact that this mobile phone had now been stolen. Was that right?
Nearly. It's about the police phoning them. I mean, he's on the right line, really.
He is, indeed.
The police, because they have nothing else to do, are going to spend the rest of their lives texting messages into phones that might be stolen. So if you've bought a phone for £3 from a bloke in the pub,
It won't be any use to you because you're going to have 14,000 messages saying hello, 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 and things
I don't understand the technology of this. It just seems very strange to have all these coppers sitting there sending messages to stolen phones.
But that's supposed to be some sort of a deterrent, isn't it? Like if you're going to buy a phone off a thief, a message will come up, this phone is stolen. But if a Nigerian was buying that phone, he'd look at the phone and go, this phone is stolen! In that case, I want £20 off.
Well, people can't steal enough of them for me, to be honest.
There's a much greater volume of noise coming from the whine of people who don't like other people's mobile phones than there is for the mobile phones.
Smugness is silent. There's far too much mobile goods in the world. This is why there's more crime, not because people are inherently more criminal than they used to be, just because stuff is easier to nick. Now, when you had a phone, you know, clamped to the wall and you had to go, hello, Mayfair 23, nobody ever stole it. It's, you know, things weren't stolen, were they?
You only get 3 yards away before the cord stopped them, isn't it? I suppose you could have learned on those things and graduated. You could have been ready when mobile phones came in. I don't have one, you know.
Well, I can sell you one.
Don't make the deal yet, Alan. I might be able to get her down by 20 quid.
The idea is that the stolen phone will ring automatically every 5 minutes, which means the thieves are going to be subjected to an irritating tone even when there isn't a Labour Party broadcast on. 2 points to someone. Alan, listen to this.
Listeners at home won't realise this, but Alan has just executed John Travolta's famous dance from Saturday Night Fever.
Nor would they have been able to lip-read what I said about modern music, because I didn't understand that.
That wasn't modern music.
Modern music? Yes, Alan, it's this damn new barbershop quartet music that's sweeping the nation's
youth.
That
knockdown furniture, isn't it? That looks the same way from both ends. It's an acronymous furniture.
So that was 2 points to Alan. Oh, well, should we have a question as well, Owen? I suppose so. Alan, which spin doctor started spinning discs this week and had old Blue Eyes spinning in his grave?
Oh, yes. Can I say things about Mandelson in front of you? Or behind you?
You can say what you like, it's just me that mustn't say.
Well, no, I just remember, I grew up on a news quiz where we weren't allowed to mention Mandelson, otherwise John Burt would come round and kick you witless. But he sang, God help us, I don't know whether it was ironic, I don't understand terms like postmodernist because I'm very old, but he sang, I did it my way. This put images into my head that I couldn't really handle. I don't know which way he did it. I don't think I've done it his way, but he sang it in Hartlepool, where I would guess not many people have.
It seems quite an un-Peter Mandelson thing to do, really. It's more of a John Prescott thing, isn't it? Up at a karaoke night, from a jack to a king.
Well, it's a song, really. I'd rather have him sing Mad About the Boy and I'd know where I stood. You know? My favourite version was Dorothy Squires. You remember Dorothy Squires? She sang it. It was rather more masculine than Peter Mandelson, but she was a great singer. Married Roger Moore, God help her. But they were happy for 15 years.
Masculine.
I never understood that, really. Probably why his neck is stiff. Anyway, we don't want to delve. Is that the end of round one, Simon?
We can but hope. Labour's very own Ginger Spice, Peter Mandelson, shocked crowds at karaoke night in his native Hartlepool by breaking into My Way. Colleagues dragged him off stage before he could do two other favourite classics, Dome on the Range and Can You Lonesome Tonight? Mandelson later said he wanted to appear on Stars in Your Eyes, though the only chance of that is if he happens to tap John Prescott on the shoulder. In the interest of critical balance, we have to say that the Liberal Democrat Party is filled with nylon cardigans. So, after the exciting round one, we start the thrilling round two with a cutting from the Portsmouth News.
A daguerreotype image of Charles Dickens, an early form of photograph on glass, was expected to sell for between £20,000 and £25,000 when it went under the hammer at Christie's in London.
Thanks to Arthur Green of Waterloo for that. Hey, Linda, who loved the fact that they booked Bill?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I myself was in Hay on Wye at the weekend, and I had thought that all the little disinfectant soap mats everywhere were a precaution against foot and mouth. But then I found that Bill Clinton was going to be in town, dragging his cloven hooves through them. And this is what it is. He came to Hay on Wye, didn't he? A literature festival. Great place to pick up chicks, I suppose.
He was out jogging, wasn't he? He was out jogging, enjoying the country air. Of course, he didn't exhale.
I'm sure it was jogging.
How is it that when they're out jogging, there's always a photographer there to get them jogging? I often wonder about this. They can't just slip out of their hotel early one morning. No, there always seems to be a bank of photographers.
You think the photo will be quite blurry as well, wouldn't
you? Yes, I don't think it was going very fast.
Clinton's presence in Hay on Wye was a boon for struggling local small businesses. Three local dry cleaners decided to open 24 hours round the clock.
But she was very good at Hay on Wye, I have to say that.
Who, Linda?
Linda.
You weren't there, were you?
Oh, I was.
Oh, you didn't say... Oh, you didn't say hello.
I was with my wife.
Well?
Moving swiftly on.
Matthew, who's backed down after claims that he'd been doctoring his qualifications?
Just keep talking while I glance over at what Alan is writing. Writing here. Mackay.
I'm not sure it's
man.
Mackay. Well, it's a Scotsman. It's Mackay. It's Robert something. He's Dr. Robert Mackay, and he's got 85 letters after his name. And someone took him to the Board of Advertising Practitioners, or the Advertising Standards Practicing Group, and said, you can't have all these letters, you particularly can't have the two in front of your name because you are not a doctor. And he practices alternative things, like aromacheropathy and stuff like that. I'm not entirely what it is, but he's got a card with 40 letters after his name. But he's not a doctor.
Must be wonderful that you have the time to learn about these things and look them all up in the newspapers.
Well, the thing is, there's an election on, and there's only crap in the papers apart from stuff like this. None of it written by you, I have to say.
But he had about 85 letters after his name. He had every single qualification he'd ever done in his life, like his 11 plus, third in the egg and spoon race, 1957. Just standing there and reading the notice was enough to give you a bad back. I think he drummed up business for himself. Oh, I've been standing there for ages.
Chiropractor Robert Mackay boasts the longest letterhead in Britain. The Advertising Standards Authority has ruled that he does hold all the qualifications, except that he shouldn't call himself doctor. He told the ASA investigators that people making these complaints against him didn't have a leg to stand on, and they said, that's why you're not a doctor anymore. 2 points to Alan. Linda, why has frozen sperm proved a soaring success?
Because they've managed to inseminate eagles with frozen sperm. That's why.
But you have to be quick.
2 points. Mind you, they live in the Highlands of Scotland, so it must be getting on that way already, I would have thought.
Yeah, but did you hear what they called the eagle, though? They called it Thor.
Well, no, that's not the name, that's an instruction.
Do eagles have testicles? Where are they?
Well, I've never felt myself, I don't know.
I don't know, but where eagles dare, I suppose. Why would you need to know that? Need to know that.
You'd certainly need to know that if you wanted eagle sperm, wouldn't you?
But I don't want any, thank you. Sick of people coming round the door trying to sell you things you don't want. If it's not double glazing, it's eagle sperm.
What do you mean? I don't understand. What do you mean, how do you get it? You put an eagle in a cubicle with a picture of a swan without the eagle. Because the eagle does it for you.
I think I've got a career ahead as your stooge, actually.
A farmer in Lanarkshire has successfully hatched a baby golden eagle by artificial insemination using frozen sperm, a process known by the scientific community as Mum's Gone to Iceland. Scientists believe this breakthrough could help preserve endangered species. They've been inundated with inquiries from rural post offices, Oasis, and the Conservative Party. Alan, why are canvassers frustrated by the shortlist?
I hope we were going to have King Jaime I of Spain. Did you see that? We probably won't. It's a wonderful little thing in the Independent. He died in 1303. And you must have seen this. They've opened his sarcophagus, and there's two heads inside it. And they don't know which skull is his. I have the question again now. But, I mean, I knew it wasn't coming up, but I thought the world ought to have known about that. Canvassers, this is. Come on.
Alan, why are canvassers frustrated by the shortlist? Canvassers.
Do we know this? It's my turn to be totally puzzled by this.
My colleague has understood the question.
It's something
that hasn't entirely got the answer.
Something with cans. Something with cans, is it?
What?
Canvases.
No, canvassers. People who use canvas.
Yeah, I understand that. It's about people on tents.
No.
Hold on.
Is this about
canvas artists?
Yes.
Is this about the Turner?
Yes.
Oh, what a cryptic question that was. No wonder.
Can I apologise to Matthew Paris now?
Well, we got it.
We know it. It's the Turner Prize, isn't it?
It is.
There's no paintings in it.
It is.
There's no art in it, actually.
No, it's all conceptual art, isn't it? Which, it is. As living in East London, I'm very used to, because the whole of Shoreditch now is just one big installation. Everyone's an artist in East London. There's no other jobs except conceptual artist. Everywhere you go, like, you go into a pub, there's a jar of pickled eggs on the counter. You say, I'll have one of those. You say, that'll be £300,000. It's a Damien Hirst. You empty a filthy ashtray, leave that alone, it's a Tracy Emin. It's a nightmare. It's a living nightmare.
No, I know about that. If you look at me now I know. They've done all the hard work. There's a bit of blue tack, isn't there? And screwed up ball of paper and all that stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, a bit late, but that's what it is. Sorry, Matthew.
The shortlist for the annual turn.
The one good thing with conceptual art is, unlike conventional art, you don't really have to look at it for very long, because you can see immediately that it's rubbish. Because it's quite literally rubbish. But with conventional art, it's a bit tricky, isn't it? Because in an art gallery, you always feel a bit self-conscious looking at a painting, then moving away after a moment, because there's all other people still looking at it. And you think, oh, I look like I haven't really understood it. And then you think, go back and look at it. You think, no, it is what I thought it was. And then you think, well, perhaps there's even more to it, and there's 12 top hats hidden in it somewhere. You spot them and you win a prize, but no.
The nominations for the Turner Prize were made this week. Not one of the four artists are painters. One of the nominated artists, Martin Creed, makes works of art out of scrumpled up sheets of A4 paper, an idea he first developed after working as a news quiz scriptwriter. Martin Creed has also exhibited blobs of blue tack pressed onto gallery walls, though he later admitted they were really meant to hold up another of his avant-garde artworks, a poster of a tennis player scratching her bum. Before we start the final round, here's an item from the Metro newspaper.
Her solicitor told the court she had smoked the drug to relieve symptoms of chronic fatigue syndrome, adding, there are days when she can't get out of bed because of difficulties with her joints.
Linda, listen to this. I should have known you'd always keep me waiting for those wedding bells. Those wedding bells. Linda, why has one reverend rung the changes by speaking in tongues?
Yes, this is a very sweet story. It's a church in Wales where they can't afford bell ringers. You just can't get them. You just can't get the bell ringers these days, apparently. It's a dying art. And people obviously like bells for their wedding. So what they've got people to do is they've got the congregation. Say you were the congregation. They've got half of them to be the dings. And the other half to be the dongs. And they do the lovely wedding bells, ding dong, ding dong. Although sometimes there's a bit of anarchy and some are dinging when they should be donging and donging when they should be. But generally it's all quite jolly and they make their own entertainment. It all sounds rather lovely, actually. I quite like the idea.
It all sounds rather cheap.
Well, that's
what they're
going
to do next. The priest can't turn up, so they're going to do the wedding vows by text.
Cheap is one word. Affordable might be a kind of word.
But how do they fit them all into the church tower to do this?
Well, it does them a lot of damage hanging by a rope from their legs, actually. That's not too nice. I like this idea. I think it's sweet. I think more essential services should take this up. Police cars should just have someone sitting on the top going, no, 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 no.
The Reverend Norman Lee separates the wedding guests into ding and dong singers. The last wedding he officiated at, the bride's family did their dings to great effect, and the bridesmaids were very impressed by the groom's dong. The Reverend himself is an expert in campanology, the ancient skill of watching Saul Graham Norton on TV. Gina, which artistic feud looks like turning into a storm in a D cup?
Artistic feud, D cup. No idea.
Well, D cup must be ladies' jock straps. But what else it might be, I don't know.
We know this.
Oh, do you know it?
No. Go on, yes, we do. But half of us.
Go on, Alan.
Do you know this
it's
one?
It's even more bizarre than the Turner Prize, if I'm right on this one. It's a court in California. There is a dispute between two artists. One of them has made a 65-ton ball out of old braziers.
Old what?
Old braziers. Bras.
Braziers.
Braziers. Liberty bodices.
Ah. And someone has claimed it was her idea first, because 3 years ago she made one. She made an enormous ball out of bras. And they're having a fight in court about this, with these two big balls made out of bras, or two big bras made out of balls, or whatever it is that they've got. But it's an artistic dispute. It's a sort of row that Gauguin used to have with Van Gogh. In the still watches of the night. Oh, I invented that bloody underwear statue, you French bastard. I mean, there's a lot of...
Do you think...
My idea to make a mountain out of condoms? What?
Now, Van Gogh, he was a funny old cove, wasn't he? Chopped his ear off when his girlfriend left him and sent it to her. Do you think she came back? Got that bloody ear through the post and thought, oh, you know how to get round me. I said, you know how to get round me.
Do you think the essence of the complaint was the use of a lot of bras to make a shape, or that it was to make a ball? I mean, had one of them made a pyramid out of brassiers, would that have been all right?
I think you're confusing me with someone who gives a... Don't know.
It would be a very good career move for me.
Two conceptual artists are fighting in California courts over who was first to come up with the idea to turn thousands of bras into a gigantic ball. Mr. Nicolino and Miss Duffy originally collected them together, but their partnership ended in acrimony. Miss Duffy said she was sad to see them go their separate ways, but till Mr. Nicolino returns her bra, they'll just have to stay like that. His ball contains an incredible 14,000 bras, the result of determination, effort, and spending most of the 90s hanging around the back of the White House waiting for them to empty the Hoover bags. 2 points to somebody or other. Alan, who got into a flap over a cat.
I think... You read it too, then. I think these are two people called Gilroy.
Yes.
And they were sitting at home one night, and they heard a cat meow. And she said, is that cat meowing? And Mr. Gilroy said, yes, it is. So they lifted the carpet. They couldn't see it. And they went into all the cupboards and it wasn't there. So they rang the fire brigade. And the fire brigade came round, tore out their radiators and their cupboards. They did not hear. Got the RSPCA. The RSPCA came round, said, yes, it is a cat. And they dismantled the rest of the house. And about 3 days later, as Mr. and Mrs. Gilroy was sitting in this piece of wasteland, formerly had a mortgage on it, they heard the noise of a singing biscuit barrel. They had been given, and they didn't know they'd been given it, the present of a biscuit barrel which they hadn't unwrapped. This biscuit barrel, when he took a biscuit out, it made the noise of a cat going meow. Everybody in this story deserves everybody else in this story. The fire brigade, the arson, a whole lot of them.
Quite some time ago, I read about someone who flushed a puppy down the loo by mistake and rang the emergency services, and they had the drains up, apparently, within about 20 minutes, and it struck me... But if you were to ring plumbers, it would be weeks before it... if you have any trouble with your drains, just flush a puppy down the loo.
Right? two-day search for the trapped cat by three fire crews, RSPCA inspectors, and neighbours failed to find the feline, but did unearth the remote for the TV, three old shillings, and Shergar. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
This was sent in by James Evans from the Western Morning News. Police investigating the discovery of a 60-year-old human remains buried below the stairs of a house said yesterday they'd found an axe head. On Tuesday, workmen renovating a house in Plymouth came across a human skull, jaw, collarbone and arm beneath a thin layer of concrete under the stairs. Police said the discovery was being treated as suspicious.
Gina.
Right, this was sent in by Mrs. J. Hove, Hampton Hill, Middlesex. An armed robber entered a post office in France, brandishing a pistol and demanding 100,000 francs. After being told the branch didn't have that much cash, he gave up and made a withdrawal from his own account. He was arrested the next day.
Matthew.
Philip Hackett from Kent sent this in, but it originally comes from the Birmingham Sunday Mercury. I'll start reading it in the middle. His boss said, George was always the first guy in each morning and the last to leave at night, so no one found it unusual that he was in the same position all that time and didn't say anything. He was always absorbed in his work and kept much to himself. A post-mortem examination revealed that he'd been dead for 5 days.
Alan.
It's from the Rochester Evening Post. It says, the high quality of communication which helped the Gravesend Tigers Rugby Club to their most successful season for many years doesn't appear to extend to their off-the-pitch activities. At their annual fancy dress dinner and dance last Saturday, five members of the team came as Anne Widdecombe.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. Matthew and Alan have 15 points, but Linda and Gina have managed to hang on by a fingernail to their winning score of 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a notice seen in the Belfast Church by P. Campbell of Coleraine.
The Second Coming of Jesus Christ, Sunday at 7 p.m, arranged by the Christadelphians.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Matthew Paris, Linda Smith and Gina Yashere. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the newsreader was Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Debbie Barham, Nev Fountain, Tom Jameson and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.